G-Force, a kaiju podcast.
G-Force?
Well, it's big and terrible. More frightening than I ever thought possible.
Kiss you, guys.
What terrible language!
Calling Monster Island. Calling Monster Island.
And now, your hosts.
One is me, and the other is Godzilla.
Nick and Andrew.
Hello, and welcome to G-Force, a kaiju podcast, that show where a rotating roundtable of kaiju enthusiasts gather to discuss all things kaiju. I am one of those enthusiasts, Andrew, and with me tonight is another one of those enthusiasts.
Hey, it's Nick.
And joining the both of us is yet a third enthusiast to complete our trio of kaiju comic bookers.
Hey, it's Brendan.
And we are here today to discuss 2013's Godzilla Rulers of Earth from IDW Comics, issues 1 to 4.
Issues 1 through 4 of Godzilla Rulers of Earth were written by Chris Mowry, with a story by Chris Mowry and Matt Frank, and letters by Sean Lee. The art for issues 1 and 2 were done by Matt Frank, but in issues 3 and 4, Matt Frank and Jeff Zorno. The colors in issues 1 and 2 were done by Rhonda Pattinson, and for issues 3 and 4, Priscilla Tramontano.
I will give a brief history of this comic series in a moment, but first I just want to jump in and ask, what is your history and familiarity with this IDW series?
For me, I remember reading part of this when it first came out. I read, like, I don't remember the exact number of issues, but to somewhere around the, like, you know, Gigan and Orga stuff, you know, that little saga. And then I kind of dropped off just because I'm bad at keeping up with comic books as they're coming out, especially back then because I was 14. But then, you know, eventually I got, like, a few years ago, I got the like trade paperback for like the first half of the series and read that, and then read the rest probably illegally online. And I really liked it. I don't remember most of it, but that's just how I am. I'm not good at remembering things unless I, you know, go through them multiple times. But yeah, like I said, I really liked it, and I'm excited to see how I feel about it this time around.
I was keeping up pretty regularly with the 2013 IDW stuff initially. I was keeping up with it up until the initial Biollante issue, and then I kind of lost track of it. But I was keeping up with all the other ones. Like, I remember I was reading Cataclysm, In Hell, Legends, Half Century War, of course, the GOAT. But yeah, I was keeping up with it pretty well. And then I kind of fell off, both, like Nick saying, it's very hard to keep up with comics when they're going on. And also the fact that all of this is on my iPod, which I completely, utterly smashed while moving to my current house. So that kind of put a damper in it. But yeah, I was keeping up with this very much and absolutely loved it. And I'm very glad to come back and revisit it.
For my part, I did not really, you know, I wasn't doing a whole lot with Godzilla comics. It's one of those things for me, a lot like Doctor Who comics, where so much of what I enjoy about the franchise is about the on-screen action, or in Doctor Who's case, the on-screen portrayal, that reading the book version doesn't seem to have that much of a point to me. But, you know, I was bored, and so I started just perusing through what the library had a few years back, and they had, you know, I sampled most of the comics that we've covered and will cover around that time, Half Century War. I don't think In Hell was out quite yet, but Cataclysm, or at least not available to me, King of the Monsters, you know, Kingdom of Monsters, I should say, a lot of them. And this was the only one that really super grabbed me. It just stood out head and shoulders from the rest. And I had not really thought about reading comics online yet, so I was just stuck with what the library had, which was the equivalent of that first trade paperback you were talking about. The first, I think, three of the six collected editions. And that was all that the library had. And it was also all that was easily in print, because 4, 5, and 6 were like out of print and super expensive at that time. So for quite a while, to me, the story ended there at the first half, which has a bit of a cliffhanger ending. But, you know, afterwards, there's a huge time jump. and things really change. So it's a very good natural break point. It's almost, you know, it's got a little bit of an Empire Strikes Back ending, but it's told a complete story. But yeah, I was really in love with it. I just love so much of what they did. When I said, you know, an enthusiast at the beginning of the show, that is the apt term. And then when they finally did that second trade paperback edition, I finally got the Omnibus Part 2 and read that. And honestly, I felt like it fell off a lot, so I became a lot more disillusioned with it at that point. But that was my experience with the comics. So let's delve a little into the history of those comics. So what I did not actually realize when I was initially reading this is that this was actually the third series in a trilogy from IDW. I knew that the first series, Godzilla Kingdom of Monsters, existed. I watched Linkara make fun of a few issues on the Top of the Fourth Wall. But I did not realize that the second series, Godzilla Ongoing, which has later been collected as Godzilla History's Greatest Monster, was also set in the same world and continuity. So Godzilla Kingdom of Monsters came out from 2011 to 2012. Godzilla Ongoing took that handoff from 2012 to early 2013. And in 2013 is when this series began to come out. So it's not like there were years in between these. It was a pretty ongoing, unbroken run. In the first series, Godzilla Kingdom of Monsters, and of course, spoilers for anyone that wants to check these out, but I think that they are pertinent backstory and things that I just kind of took as offhand world-building references initially on this read-through. Now I'm going, oh, that's from that, that's from this. So perhaps it will enhance our audience's enjoyment as well. Godzilla Kingdom of the Monsters has Godzilla first emerge as a destructive giant reptile, and the U.S., under the lead of President Ogden, a very not at all disguised President Obama stand-in, attempt to nuke the monster, which only succeeds in granting him his signature atomic breath. So that's presented as a mutation that happens in the story. A couple of sinister twins, like Shobijin but for Batra, make a power play, and stalwarts like Anguirus, Rodan, Mothra, Batra, Kumonga, and especially King Ghidorah show up. Military man Steven Woods and freshly orphaned little girl Allie end up piloting Heisei-styled Mechagodzilla, built in Detroit as an anti-Godzilla weapon, into battle to kill King Ghidorah, which is why one of Godzilla's most iconic foes will not be making an appearance in this series. Now, I haven't read that far in the comic. I gave up well before this, and I haven't watched the series or played the game, but I get the feeling that the dynamic there was very much a The Last of Us before The Last of Us did it, you know, in a Godzilla world, with the guy and little girl surviving in a complete disaster post-apocalyptic world, although it didn't get nearly as post-apocalyptic as the writers initially wanted, but that's a different topic. This first series was criticized by some as being too satirical and mean-spirited. It wavers between parody and dark comedy, with stand-ins for Lady Gaga and the Jersey Shore cast being treated about like that little kid in Final Wars treats his Gamera figure. But it was enough to spawn a sequel that, as I said before today, I had not realized was connected. In the second series, Godzilla Ongoing, later retitled Godzilla History's Greatest Monster, society struggles to rebuild and to cage all the monsters running amok into a monster island. A monster kill team of people who have lost their loved ones to the monsters begins to work on this, but they are interrupted by the arrival of space invaders, Hedorah, Space Godzilla, Gigan, and Monster X, who later does become Kaiser Ghidorah. The Earth realizes that the monsters had been awakened from across the globe as a defensive system to drive off these invaders from space, and a charge led by Mothra and the Shobijin, a Kiryu-styled new Mechagodzilla, and of course Godzilla himself, manages to defeat all of these space invaders. So coming off of that, Rulers of Earth is the third, and generally in the fandom, best-loved act in this series. And while it does stand alone just fine, as I said, this brief synopsis is just to demonstrate that this is very much a lived-in universe, a world where monsters are well-known and plenty of battles have already taken place. And personally, I think that Rulers of Earth really benefits from this. Like, so many of the main figures have already had their run and even been killed off. It leaves an eclectic mix of kaiju that aren't usually mainliners for this series and forces them to be more creative. We get some fun, wacky pairings and some really creative storylines, and unexpected, more obscure kaiju now that King Ghidorah and Space Godzilla aren't here to take the spotlight like they usually do. I think being forced to mine the leftovers of the other two series and make do with the monsters that haven't been used yet really ended up steering this series into a nice direction. And the military teams in the last two series being the protagonists, sort of having been done, lets us move into a different kind of protagonist in this one, even though we still get plenty of military action. So for me, I think a large part of what makes the series so fun is the angles that the other two already used becoming unavailable to them, which just led them to make something very outside the mold of what Godzilla comics usually do.
Yeah, I would agree completely. There's definitely this general feeling this is like the lunatics running the asylum. This is the hardcore Godzilla fans making the Godzilla comics they've always wanted to do. And again, that is really a big part of the appeal for me. It's like, I went back in time, I could not believe I would tell myself, yeah, there's a Godzilla comic where Mothra and Godzilla team up to fight Destoroyah, but it's only a couple issues after the rematch against Zilla and Manda and Gazora teaming up to destroy the Navy. It does not seem like something we would ever get, and it really does make it something very unique. I do wonder how much it was like the necessity of like, oh, we've already killed off these characters. But at the same time, I also think like it's also very much a what can we do that no one has seen before element that I really like.
I also really like how you don't have to read the previous two runs to understand this one. I think they do a nice balance of linking them together without making you feel like you're missing something if this is where you're starting, because I knew this was the third part, you know, but I'd never like I'd read the beginnings. It was kind of the same thing when Kingdom of Monsters came out, and then when Godzilla, the ongoing run came out, I just started reading them and then stopped because I just forgot to keep going. But also shout out to Godzilla Ongoing for having him attack Pittsburgh in one of the first issues. That's pretty cool to me. But I was able to read this without having fully read those two and understood it just fine and had a great time with it. And I appreciate that, especially when comic books can get so overwhelming when they go on for long enough, to the point where catching up with the continuity and where the world is at can become a chore.
I agree. I do think the kind of like standaloneness of it is very well done, though mainly I just wanted to comment how, while I'm not really a big fan of them, Godzilla Ongoing has what is hands down the funniest scene in the entire franchise for me, which is when they park Kiryu at a power station, Kumonga piggybacking on them to get to the final battle, and they radio the team running and go, "Fill her up, please." That alone was worth it.
Yeah, I did not get that far. As I said, I read basically the first collected edition of Ongoing and none of Kingdom of the Monsters, though I've seen the first three or four issues made fun of. But yeah, I appreciated that when I read the original one, I had a little bit of that knowledge that Woods was pre-existing and he had piloted the Mechagodzilla. That's all I had. But that was really all I needed. I didn't even catch the references to Ongoing, which I appreciated this time around, no going, oh, I see what that's referring to. But it was really helpful that at the time, just didn't need it. I didn't even know I was missing anything. It just worked jumping in right there. And, you know, honestly, from everything I've seen, like in Kingdom of the Monsters, within the first few issues, we have someone who has lost a child in Godzilla's rampage jump onto him as a suicide bomber. And it's almost like a joke, like, boom, this little pop on the side of Godzilla's arm. It does nothing, you know. And as far as I know, at the end of Ongoing, we have almost something similar with one of the main characters. And it just seems like there was a very dark tone to a lot of this that I really appreciate. Feels like it was sort of exorcised by the time they got to this series. That, you know, those were two. I mean, the first issue of Ongoing ends with one of the main characters losing a spouse at the altar to Kumonga's attack. And then the ending is, yeah, a dude killing himself in front of his son out of vengeance to try and kill Godzilla futilely, uselessly. And it just feels like after this very dark ongoing series, someone just looked at this and said, you know, let's go bright, let's go colorful, let's go fun. And I appreciate that it's like they'd gotten that out of their system. Now they could do something else.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Like, okay, we've done the serious stuff that makes it seem legit done. Now let's do the fun stuff. I definitely got that vibe too. It's like Marvel, you know, like, okay, we've done our gritty Iron Man. We've done our Shakespearean Thor. All right, let's do a Guardians of the Galaxy movie with all the 70s pop rock you can imagine.
I don't want to make any assumptions about anyone involved with the previous two runs, but I get the vibe that sometimes Godzilla fans feel the need to have Godzilla be really dark in order to justify there being a Godzilla story at all. Like, sometimes it seems like, oh, this is what will make Godzilla, make people take him seriously, is if we make everything really dark, you know? And to me, it seems like Chris Mowry and Matt Frank are comfortable enough with Godzilla that they just didn't feel the need to do that. And they went, well, let's just tell, like, you know, your average fun Godzilla story with this comic. And I appreciate that. And again, I don't want to make assumptions about the people that wrote the last two runs, but I've seen a lot of people kind of be self-conscious about their enjoyment of Godzilla and just want him to be super dark all the time.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I do know in the first series, the creators, the initial creators said that what they wanted to do was tell a story, you know, partly inspired by poor government response to natural disasters, how the emergence of kaiju would basically just cause the complete collapse of civilization. And people would descend into doing the darkest, most barbarous things. You know, kind of sounds like a Prophecies of Nostradamus ending that they wanted, where it literally was just the disintegration of society into mobs, into looting, into savagery, into people becoming their worst selves, and eventually into the Stone Age. And Toho wasn't down for that, so after the first 8 issues, they left. But I think they were also responsible for a lot of that. Oh, look, people would be defending monster rights, so we'll put that in as a parody. Lady Gaga's weird, so we'll put her in as a parody. I really hate the Jersey Shore, so we'll put them in a parody and have the main character walk away and let them burn to death instead of helping him, because ha ha ha, doesn't Jersey Shore suck? So it seems like their heads were in a very nihilistic, mean-spirited place, and Toho really quashed that, which is why other writers took over, and I don't know, because I didn't read that second half of the series, if they changed the tone, and I don't know what was up with the second series, but at least one of them, they wanted to tell a story much darker than Toho was comfortable with. But yeah, it definitely seems like the writers here did not have that in their headspace. They had, let's do a 60s, 70s Showa superhero Godzilla alien invasion story. And I really appreciate that. Now that we've gone on at length about these comics, done half our discussion ahead of time, like eating our dessert first for once, why don't we hit the synopsis for these stories that we are talking about, and then we can take a look at some of our highlights from them. The first annual Megazoological Conference in Honolulu, Hawaii, is attracting giant monster experts from across the globe. But unfortunately, another guest is headed for the Big Island too. And while radar trackers can't get a positive ID, there is a good chance that it might be the king of the monsters, Godzilla himself. Lucy Casprell is an aspiring young naturalist out to attend the conference, one of the first disciples of a new science, out to document the facts about these kaiju and their natures as the basis for all future study. When the opening presentation is interrupted by the arrival of a new kaiju, Lucy pulls a Hank Azaria and runs out to film it as everyone else runs away. And the comparison to our beloved animal is apt, as the new monster, dubbed Zilla, the 1998 design, nearly devours her before intervention from the counter kaiju reaction force drives it back. The commander, Stephen Woods, the protagonist of the Godzilla Kingdom of the Monsters series, chews her out for getting so close, but both are interrupted by the arrival of the true King of the Monsters. The two titans have a titanic brawl, ending only when Godzilla breaks off the fight and returns to the sea for reasons unknown. Meanwhile, in the Grand Canyon, Gigan emerges from the rubble, presumably in the aftermath of the Godzilla ongoing series, and battles Kumonga, The battle is watched by persons unknown who express a proprietary ownership in the cyborg and recall him to them for an upgrade. Lucy is approached by Professor Kenji Ando, founder of the conference. Impressed by her gumption, he offers a position on a global kaiju investigation team that he's starting. She meets her fellow seven team members, while downtown, Woods and his right-hand man Chavez discover a strange parasitic something that came out of Zilla's skin. They take it to CKR's science division in San Diego. In orbit, Gigan's mysterious puppet masters make contact with their undersea allies, the Devonians, who warn them of an escaped creature, and one of the alien's shape-shifting agents prepares an assault on the science division, where Mr. Allison, in charge of R&D, is just perfecting the icebox, a bazooka-sized, scaled-down version of the Absolute Zero Kid. But this is not the only assault on San Diego, as a nearby sci-fi convention is swarmed by destroyer aggregates. At 200 miles off the coast, an aircraft carrier is destroyed by the Devonians' escapees, Manda and Gizora. Utilizing these diversions, the aliens abscond with the sample, leaving most of the R&D department dead and Dr. Allison paranoid and traumatized. The aliens declaring that they've been spaceborne refugees for too long and now want a planet to call their own. But since humanity badly outnumbers them, they're having the monsters doing their work for them, after which Earth will be their new home. In Malibu, a badly wounded Godzilla staggers out of the surf and collapses on the beach. He rises again as he's beset by destroyer aggregates, blasting them off with a nuclear pulse, but it's clear that he's badly weakened. And when the adult destroyer form, the pinnacle of undersea Devonian bioweapon research, arrives out of the ocean, it doesn't look like the King of the Monsters has much of a chance. However, the surprise arrival of Mothra, with her larvae trailing behind as an ally in battle, gives Godzilla a chance to recharge with the reactor of the downed aircraft carrier and turn the tables on Destroya, annihilating him. The larvae help the wounded Mothra home, while Godzilla returns to the sea. And in China, Lucy and the rest of Professor Ando's team have been tasked with locating the new mystery kaiju in the area. However, as they wait by the lakeside, a monster finds them, Varan, in all his unbelievable triphibian glory. However, the Chinese attaché informs them that this is not the princess they're looking for. It's in another castle. There is yet another monster lurking nearby. And that covers the action-packed first four issues of Rulers of Earth. So to start things off, I noticed, and I bet you guys caught these too, on page 5 of the first comic, as we are seeing Chavez and Woods in their office, we've got an Atragon model on the desk. We've got an Age of the Gods book, which is very nice, deep cut reference. I still want to get my hands on a copy of that, but not surprising from Matt Frank. And a poster that just says demotivation because nukes. Plus a seeming Gorosaurus cameo in a photo pinned to the wall.
Yeah, that was a great little batch of Easter eggs. And there's also, on a different page, I don't know which one exactly, but Lucy's hotel room number is 1954.
I also caught that on the desk there's also a toy of the Heisei Mechagodzilla.
Or probably even a model, since this is the guy that piloted it in the comic.
Oh yeah, good point. I also just caught this now. I realized the convention destroy attacks. Ultra Convention 7. 7, 7, 7. Ultra 7.
Oh, nice.
Nice, I missed that one.
There's also a bunch of chakras in that big splash page of Godzilla. Page 7, I think.
Oh, that's right. There was also the Yalin, the yacht from Ever a Horror of the Deep, is in the corner of that splash page, which was cool.
You know, I saw the name there and I was trying to remember the significance of it. Definitely a very Easter egg kind of series.
Yeah, there's also the corncob hippie is on the cover of issue 3 in the background from Godzilla vs. Gigan. But the first thing that stuck out to me was just whenever they detect Zilla at the beginning on the radar, I always really enjoy seeing a giant monster on a radar. I don't know why. It's just the kind of thing that I think is really cool. That said, they said that he would be making landfall the next day or whatever, which implies that they knew way ahead of time that he was coming and nobody bothered to evacuate Honolulu. So that's kind of wild.
You know, I didn't think about that, but that's a really good point.
Like, if you're going to do that, don't have it be a whole day out.
Yeah, the heroes are falling asleep on the job there. That's not good.
I can only hope Zilla's so fast that he like got there an hour earlier or later. Sorry, an hour later.
But I remember when this first came out, the first two issues, I remember, first of all, everybody being really excited about Matt Frank, like finally doing like a full run of a Godzilla comic book. And I remember it feeling like a really big deal that Godzilla was fighting Zilla again, or at least I was really excited about it. And I really like the fight. I think it's really good. And I like that Zilla actually stands a chance, at least, you know, compared to his outing in Godzilla Final Wars, where Godzilla just trashes him in like under 10 seconds. So, but yeah, it's a cool fight. Lots of really great art from Matt Frank. And I just like how smart Zilla is. Like, there's a moment where, like, later on in the fight towards the end, Godzilla is like choking him. He's holding him up, choking him with one hand, and you know, Zilla's like head is back, and because his eyes are on both sides of his head, he's able to like roll his eyes back and like look behind himself. And there's a point where he does that, and there's these helicopters behind him, and the helicopters fire their missiles. And I like that Zilla is smart enough to move his head out of the way so that the missiles hit Godzilla instead. I thought that was really cool, and it felt really in character because, you know, Zilla is the 98 Godzilla design, and Godzilla was very, like, smart in that movie. And so it was cool to see that in this.
That battle is even better than I remembered. It's a ton of fun, especially because, like, you really get the sense Godzilla's starting to get a little bit annoyed. Like, why won't you just stay still, you little... But yeah, I really love it. I love how smart Zilla is, though. I think my favorite part is when Godzilla actually gets a drop on him to get that choke slam with a reverse of Zilla's old pretend you disappear to then jump out of the building trick.
Yeah, I thought that was really good, too.
I do really love the whole battle, and especially I feel like we've talked about in the issues where the art is especially dynamic and really captures action well. This is one of those, which again, Matt Frank, no surprise, but the art is just so good and it captures the action so well. And I will say the one part of the art that I'm not so hot on is the design for Lucy. I feel like she looks like this weird inhuman caricature. Like, she has a super elongated neck and weirdly pale skin, and she just doesn't seem like she necessarily belongs in the same world as the rest of the characters. Like, she's kind of a more stylized Pixar character, and everyone else are relatively realistic. But yeah, the monster art, especially in these first two issues. But no, what am I saying? Really, in all of the issues, it's just phenomenal.
Okay, thank you, because I thought it was crazy for thinking she looked off.
No, she looks like she's the only one that's a character from a different comic. And it's a strange thing to do for your main protagonist. But when she goes out to record the battle, I also really appreciated her camera. I have that exact same model, little orange, you know, you flip out screen. I was just like, oh, cool. I've got that camcorder. Got it right around that time period, too. It's not HD, though. That little label on the side, that's a lie.
I don't have much to say about Lucy's design. Well, I have something to say about Lucy herself, which is that I thought it was funny that and I really liked how when Woods is like trying to get her away from the danger and take her to what they called the safe zone, she just won't shut up. Like, she just keeps yapping about this new monster that just showed up. And I thought that was really fun.
And the part where she's just like, and he's got those strange kind of things on the side. What are they called? And he's like, scoots. She's like, oh, yeah. How'd you know that? He's like, yeah, you fight these things long enough, you pick up a thing or two.
Yeah, I like that, too. But back to, you know, the fight, I really, really like the splash page of Godzilla and Zilla roaring at each other from the beginning of issue two. I thought that was really sick. Again, just so much great art in that fight. There's a really cool panel of Godzilla charging his atomic breath, and he's just a silhouette except for his spines and his eyes, which are glowing blue because he's, again, charging his atomic breath. And I think that's so cool.
I absolutely adore the way they draw Godzilla in this. Something about the like little bit of white they use to highlight the atomic breath is just amazing. And I absolutely love whenever the kaiju go pupilless. It really makes them look more intimidating. But yeah, there's something about this fight that feels really cool. Also, I want to add, reading it, I realized something kind of a little bit funny. So in our Godzilla 2 episode, we were talking about how we kind of thought if the series got to go on, Godzilla 1998 would have kind of had a Tom Holland Spider-Man treatment. You know, start off as his own thing, slowly gain more and more classic elements until in its final movie, he became like a lot more like the traditional version of the character we know as. Thinking about it, Godzilla 1998, Godzilla the series with all its new monsters and its much more action take on Godzilla 1998, and now this comic where not only is Zilla the most action-y he's ever been, but he's directly interacting with the original classic cast. I think it kind of happened.
A cross-media extravaganza. All for Godzilla 98. Who would have guessed?
I'm just glad that, you know, I mean, Zilla's presence in Final Wars is a joke. Like, it's just there to be a punchline. And I'm glad that this series, I mean, he really only gets this and then like a big moment towards the end of the run. It is a good design. It just isn't a great design for Godzilla. So it's really cool to have this series where he gets to be his own monster. You know, like Zilla is just, is now in this series, he's just a monster that exists within the world of all these other Toho monsters. And I appreciate that because like I said, it's a great just general monster design. So it's cool to see him be utilized in a way where he gets to be his own creature and kind of, in a way, steps out of the shadow of Godzilla, even if he's more directly living in it now, you know?
And I am very happy to have that punchline in Final Wars. But yeah, it is nice to have one product that's just like, okay, but what if we took him seriously, though? So yeah. Totally agree with everything you guys are saying. One other note on issue two for me and this battle. I did just love the bit with, I believe it is Chavez and his little aim for the eyes monologue. Oh, no, sorry. It's Woods and it's an internal monologue. He just says, aim for the eyes if you get the shot. Intel says that might be the only weak point. And then he's just thinking to himself, aim for the eyes. We dump trillions of dollars into fighting these things. And all we can hope for is to pull some kind of Three Stooges move. What's next? A shot to the groin? I just love that that's his, like, really, this is the best I could do is tell my guys, aim for the eyes. Maybe that'll work. The humor is really on point in this series.
Yeah. I like Woods a lot in this. Granted, again, I didn't finish Kingdom of Monsters, so I don't really remember what he's like in that. But I like him a lot so far in this. I really like that he's smart enough to just let Godzilla go when he's leaving Honolulu. Like, everyone's about to fire at him and he tells them not to, I think, and just lets him walk off because he knows that if they were to start firing at him again, he would just turn right around and fight back. And the best thing to do is just let him leave because there's no way they're going to beat him, you know? And I like that. I thought that felt smart.
I absolutely love the little bit where he's like, come on, do the thing you do just before Godzilla roars. And you can kind of see him like breathe a sigh of relief, like, okay, he won the fight, he's happy, he's going home.
Incidentally, the reference in the flashback of Woods, which he does refer to, again, having piloted Mechagodzilla, but the bosses reference repeat ransom demands. That is a callback, once again, to the second series, the Godzilla Ongoing. And on page 7 of issue 3, likewise, they give us a splash page of the surviving members of the Monster Kill Crew, who are the protagonists of Godzilla Ongoing, aka History's Greatest Monster. Once again, when I first read this, it did not even connect with me that these were references to a previous issue. I just thought it was world building. But now reading it through, it's nice to be able to go, okay, so they, even though they're not going to do anything with those guys, I think, unless I'm forgetting something, they nicely threw a little epilogue in there for people that were reading the last series, in case you wondered what happened to them. Now you know. Now, back to the story.
Well, I've already blown through my notes on issue 2.
Yep, same here. Issue 2 is one of several issues, like issue 4, really, that's one big fight scene. But, I mean, once again, I feel like all of the comments that we made in Half Century War really apply here in terms of the plot. The art is very dynamic, and they really know how to pace it so that you're not, in some cases, Godzilla versus Power Rangers. having a whole issue just be a single fight scene feels like a ridiculously protracted, boring waste. And then other ones like here, it feels like, wow, that was a treat. I feel like I just watched a movie there.
They do it really well because it's just, in Godzilla versus Power Rangers, the whole thing is just a fight. That's literally what the story is. But here, you know, they're establishing characters and, you know, there's this whole almost kind of like a mystery of what these aliens are doing. We haven't even talked about them. They're cool. I like their designs. But mostly, you know, they have these cool fights with amazing art by Matt Frank. And they're peppering in, you know, the setup for where things are going to go. And it's like the fights happen like Gigan fights Kumonga in issue one, which is really cool. It's a very short fight, but it's, you know, it's short but sweet. Gigan looks great. I love the shattered visor. That looks awesome. When I read this the first time as a 14-year-old, it made me realize that I do, in fact, prefer Showa Gigan's design. Because when I was younger, I liked Final Wars Gigan a lot. I mean, I still do, but I liked him even more back then. But anyways, I'm getting way off track with what my point was here. But my point is, you know, Gigan fights Kumonga. And then, you know, we also get the reveal that he's being watched by the aliens. And they summon him for upgrades to turn him into his Final Wars design.
Great concept.
I agree. And that's, you know, that fight establishes that Earth is being monitored by these aliens. And then when Godzilla fights Zilla afterwards, we get this the reveal that something fell off of Zilla, which was the Destroya leg. And then, you know, that sets up Destroya and everything. The fights set things up for the future, and they're not just fights for the sake of fights. And I appreciate that reading this after having read Godzilla versus Power Rangers. And I'm sorry that every single episode since we covered that comic book, we have compared something to it.
It set the benchmark for, like, to me, this one is the benchmark for how good Godzilla comics could be. And Godzilla vs. Power Rangers is the benchmark for, look, if you could beat that, you're doing okay.
Yeah.
You could always say, at least we're not Godzilla vs. Power Rangers. But, you know, you're mentioning that did just bring something up to mind real quick. And that was, I at first assumed that it was just some sort of like alien control device. And the reason Godzilla left when it fell off and Zilla also left was just like they were mind controlling Zilla. And once that was knocked off, he no longer wanted to fight. He just wanted to run away kind of thing. And that turns out not to be the case, obviously, but it does suddenly make me realize that some significant suspension of disbelief is required here, because I can buy, based on the agility stuff, that they have Zilla go up against Godzilla and survive. But that would indicate that off-screen Zilla went up against Destroya. And I don't know about that, man.
So I think, because later on Lucy's talking about, oh, all these monsters are showing up and they're coming out of the ocean, they must be running from something. And she speculates, oh, they must be running from Godzilla. And then Destroya shows up. So my reading of that, and I could be wrong, but my reading of that was that Zilla showed up in Honolulu because he got either sensed Destroya or saw him or something. And he, or maybe even had, you know, a small encounter, managed to escape or something. And he was just booking it. He was like, I am not messing with this guy.
Well, that's the thing. There had to be some kind of encounter for him to get a Destroya leg embedded in his skin. So
true. Maybe he's slippery in the water and he got away, and then Destroya turned into his little Destroya forms, try to go after him.
Yeah, maybe he just sent little Destroya aggregates out as scouts and he just ran into one of them. You know, maybe
yeah.
It's just a forward guard. I don't know.
I also love that Kumonga's just living in the Grand Canyon now, and it's just established that's his territory, and I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I like that too.
The image of the Grand Canyon full of giant spider webs is really cool.
And then full of fire, thanks to Gigan.
Yeah.
We're getting toward issue 3 here, and I just wanted to bring up, I really enjoyed the cover. You made a reference earlier that it featured the corncob hippie. The convention attack one, I should say. There's one of Woods versus a Destroya that takes place in the sci-fi convention. And I like that we also had a Zillion and a Moonlight SY-3 pilot, which I thought was an even better sort of deep cut. And though it shames me to have missed it, the comic book that is falling there upside down, but it says Zone Meteor. So there's a Zone Fighter reference that I totally missed out on. I hate when I miss Zone Fighter references because it feels like, you know, I'm the Zone Fighter guy. I should catch everything. But having translated the series does not suddenly give me great powers of observation, as it turns out. But there are alternate covers on each of these. And honestly, while some of them are a bit more spoilers than I would like for, you know, what's going to be coming in the issue, they are just all phenomenal. They are all gorgeous, gorgeous covers.
I agree. And, you know, Matt Frank is like the Godzilla artist, essentially, at least in the Western world. And when I was younger, when this came out, I did not really care at all about like Jeff Zorno's work on the series, which is stupid because it's really great. And now that I've gotten older, I appreciate it a lot more. And I think, and you know, he illustrates select pages in these issues, starting with issues 3 and 4. And I think his work is really great, too. And I feel bad that I didn't care when I was younger, but I do now.
Yeah, as someone who, like, remembered Godzilla Neo being a thing, like the regular updates, it is kind of wild looking back, seeing, like, Matt actually get to, like, basically both do the art on and kind of lead a Godzilla series. Because I do think he, like, had some creative input, especially with the new monster later on.
Chris Mowry's credited with the actual like writing, but they're both credited with the story. So he definitely had some sort of creative input.
Speaking of the art, here in issue 3, I thought the art of Ghidorah's reveal is fantastic. Chef's kiss, as you said. Like, that is a wonderful, and it's funny, he does it again with Mothra in the next issue with sort of the lens flare of being against the sun, and it works. Every time, it works.
Yeah.
And I also noted, thanks to Wikizilla, that this is the first appearance for Manda and Ghidorah in any American comics, like, ever. But yeah, he just looks gorgeous, fantastic, spot on, and I love that he doesn't get any less love and attention than Destoroyah or Mothra or any of the mainliners would.
Yeah, it's very cool. I still have not seen Space Amoeba, sadly. I want to, but I haven't yet.
Oh, yeah, you should. It's good. It's very good.
Yeah, I want to really bad. But I love the designs of the monsters in that movie. So it's really cool to see Ghidorah in this. I don't remember if he's like more present in the rest of the run. But again, like, I just really like his appearance in this. And I like Manda being there. It's just cool. They're like a cool little unexpected duo, you know, like you wouldn't expect to see those two together. But something about it just, like, makes sense. They're two sea monsters, but they're very different sea monsters. And they look good next to each other, I think.
I gotta be honest. I still have not seen Space Amoeba, but as someone who religiously played ROM hacks of Monster of Monsters, finally seeing Ghidorah get to interact with the Godzilla cast for real really warmed my heart. And yeah, it really is, like, a surprise dream pairing, just like Kumonga and Guy again. Also, I gotta say, I really like this conceit of having a invasion, not of alien monsters at first, but of sea monsters. That's something you don't really expect, but it is a really good way to like bring in all these classic like monsters like Zilla, Manda, Destoroyah. It's really smart.
And it's nice that each of the three series sort of has its theme. You know, it's the regular ground monsters in the first one, it's space in the second one. And I like that they actually took the time to go, what other major division usually gets overlooked? And they found, yeah, sea monsters, that's a big theme, but we've never really sort of teamed them all up together.
Admittedly, I liked issue 3. I took 2 notes on it. One was the corncob hippie one. Here's the other. You know, they have that little moment where Godzilla's like sort of investigating what happened. And then all of a sudden he's dragged underwater by something. And then I really like the cliffhanger at the end where he shows up and he's got that huge gash on his chest. And then he just passes out. And then that's the end of the issue. And I thought that was really effective. Even though I already knew what did it, it was still effective.
It was so good. It is probably the best cliffhanger in this, like, because that is just a real, whoa, what kind of moment.
Yeah, it's a really, really good cliffhanger. I still think about it because it is, like, you don't really see that. You don't really see Godzilla, like, instantly get that badly beaten and collapse. I guess in versus Mechagodzilla, too, but that's about it. it's really good. I also have to say, I appreciate the restraint to not have the chest scar be the 2003 chest scar given as Kiryu Goji.
Yeah, me too. They could have very easily done that. And I appreciate that they made it different. As cool as that scar is in that movie.
We were talking about how the tone skews lighter here, but I do appreciate at the bottom of page 10, just having that shredded luchador mask. I love the bright, colorful art style of this comic, but when Destroya is massacring a convention, you still need some of that darkness that's sort of central to the Destroya attack scenes in his movie. So I like that that moment still manages to convey that grim tone of the Destroya attacks, and that people are getting killed without having to be graphic, without having to be brutal, and without really breaking the visual language or style that the comics have been employing so far. It's a little touch of darkness implied within the lighter style without breaking that style.
The implication they have here, I didn't notice last time, that the reason they don't find any sailors is Gazor devours them all. Terrifying.
Yeah, again, this is the issue that kind of throws some really dark stuff in there amidst all the lighthearted stylings. And, you know, because they're not afraid to go dark and to have a higher body count, I really feel like that gives a whole lot more stakes to the battle between Woods and the Destroya, and him trying to protect the little girl. He's making a last stand there and then seemingly is about to be killed off. And then the last minute save with the ice box. It is all so, I just wrote down, I love this comic so much, because that is just, I mean, the way that it does that and that sort of take on self-sacrificial heroism and, you know, the last minute save, that is just right up my alley. That always hits me right here. That ticks all the boxes for me. So I really love how that all plays out. And even though I wasn't making the connection at the time, yeah, the fact that there are now bodies piling up really does help to give some actual stakes to this and feel like, oh, you just assume, yeah, of course the hero is going to go save the little girl. But enough people have died in this issue that maybe that's not a guarantee.
I also assume, I mean, I'm sure part of why he saved her was just, you know, the goodness of his heart. But I always assume she reminds him of the girl from Kingdom of Monsters that he, like, bonds with and takes care of and pilots Mechagodzilla with. That's the one thing I remember from that book.
I think they're both blonde, too, which would make sense.
That does bring us on to issue 4 and the resolution of that cliffhanger, which is short-lived, but that giant sort of pullback, you know, really wide shot of Godzilla collapsed on the beach. Once again, that art is just gorgeous. And then we get the, you know, Destroya Godzilla battle pretty much silent, but the energy and pacing are just so, so good. And they've nicely picked, like, they've got the blue sky, they've got the yellow sand, they picked this crab red monster that shoots bright purple beams. It's just a wonderful set of color palettes to keep things so visually engaging.
Yeah, it is gorgeous. I especially love that splash page. I'm glad you pointed out, because, again, it's a staggering image. It's really well drawn. I love the, like, scale of it.
Something I love about the Destroya fight is whenever Destroya unfolds his wings for the first time in the battle, and there's this really amazing panel where Destroya is just a silhouette when his wings unfold, and the onomatopoeia "whoosh" is written across his wings, and it just looks so dope. Shout out to Sean Lee, the letterer, for that one. And of course, again, Matt Frank for the art. The two of them make a really great team in that one panel. I just wanted to point that out because I thought it was really cool. Also, I don't remember the context, but my first note on this issue is, in all caps, nuclear pulse, hell yeah.
Yes, having him blast all of the aggregates off with the nuclear pulse made me very, very happy. So before we get to the back half of the fight, which contains one of my favorite moments in this entire series, I did think it was just interesting. We get really the reveal of the aliens in this episode. We now see what they look like, know what their agenda is. they'd already hinted at it, but now, you know, they go full out. And I just thought it was interesting that they are, you know, looking for a planet and deciding to conquer Earth. That theme returns from so many of the Showa Godzilla films. But the fact that their world isn't merely dying, but they're already a race that's stuck living in space and that is kind of killing them really feels like, yeah, this might have been some inspiration for Planet of the Monsters, or else they just came up with the idea first, the desperation of not just our world is dying and we're going to need a place to go, but we're already refugees and we can't keep living out here in the void. We need a world. But it also reminds me of the second episode of Ultraman with his refugee genocide.
What?
Speaking of Ultraman, in one panel, I don't remember which page it was, but Lucy's laptop appears to have what looks like the Science Patrol logo from Ultraman on it. And I thought that was pretty cool. And also, yeah, just on the aliens, their ship looks really cool. It kind of looks like it has a cannon, or what looks like a cannon, on the side of it, sort of like indented in like Orga and the UFO from Godzilla 2000, which is really cool. And it makes sense because Orga is in this comic book.
Yeah, I love these designs. I can't remember for sure if someone said this. It's been a while since we did this episode, but it definitely feels like what I believe was the sentiment with the Miyutos in Godzilla 2014 of like, okay, we're not doing suits. What can we do that fits these classic ideas, but it's like its own unique thing? And these aliens definitely feel like it. I love the tentacles. I love their like very bony kind of suits, kind of body parts. It's weird. They don't really specify. I'm assuming it's clothes because like the Emperor has this weird like frill thing, but I don't know. But yeah, they are very, very cool looking. I like them a lot. And yeah, that cannon is... I didn't even think of the cannon. It kind of looks like a giant staring eye, which, given they've been surveying the planet, was a very good, cool visual.
I did not even think about that. So that brings me to what is one of my all-time favorite moments in Godzilla comics and in this issue. And you, rather than just describe it to you, let me play it for you.
This creature is even stronger than we thought it would be. Perhaps phase two won't be needed after all.
You have done well. Perhaps a bit sloppy in regards to letting the others escape. But this specimen is truly remarkable.
Thank you, great leader. We call it Destroyer. The pinnacle of our research and time spent beneath this planet's oceans.
Milestone achievements do us no good if the end result is failure, Commander. This must work. The fate of our race depends on it. We simply cannot stay out here forever. Our new home must be that planet.
This is understood, my leader. We are analyzing the Godzilla specimen now for a possible solution that allows for complete terraforming of the planet, as well as the eradication of its monsters. We have located an island that is perfect for our trial. If it works there, then the rest of the planet's land masses will work as well.
Excellent work, Commander. After this, Destroyer kills Godzilla. The rest of the monsters will be easy to...
My lord, an object is heading towards the battle.
What? That speed? Impossible. Get me a visual.
Yes, sir. On screen now. It can't be.
Oh.
Mothra's arrival to, like, save the day in the Destroyer fight with that big splash page. I just love that. So I talked about, you know, how last minute rescues always get me, just the way that Mothra shows up as Godzilla is on the ropes. And we sort of have that panel in this, the alien spaceship. It just reminds me. I used the track in Superman Returns because it reminds me exactly of that sequence. You've got the fighter pilots headed in toward the plane that's going down, and then something just shoots past them. And one of them's like, "What's that? You know, nothing can move that fast." And then he just shows up there to save the day. It was so good. It gets me every single time. I absolutely, absolutely love it.
It's a really great Mothra moment. Mothra's really cool in this. And I love, like you said earlier, that panel of her showing up with the lens flare. And also the panel of her zooming on the alien like camera thing when they catch a visual of her and she's just blasting in. That's really awesome. I love Mothra so much. And I have written in my notes in all caps, "Hell yeah, Mothra."
It's such a good moment. I absolutely love it. I love everything about it. I love the look. I think this is the best Heisei Mothra has ever looked for me. I love how quickly she comes in just when the fight's starting to end. I love her and Godzilla's teamwork, like her headbutting him out of the way so that she can use her powder. It's just a really, really solid fight, and I really love it. Especially because, like, again, we've mainly just been seeing, like, kaiju try to kill each other, try and fight each other for dominance, all this. And now we get this really beautiful teamwork that, like, kind of stuns Woods himself as well. I absolutely love the little bit where the larva tries to follow his ancestors by biting Godzilla's tail, and he just gives a look of, like, not this time.
That is favorite moment number three. Just the way that he goes for that iconic tail bite, and Godzilla just turns and glares at him, and the larva looks all deflated and sad, just like, oh. So yeah, three of my favorite moments in this comic are in the first four issues. But just the idea of Mothra coming into Godzilla's rescue, because, you know, thanks to King of the Monsters, we finally got that in an American movie. And it's something that Mothra sort of was intending to do in Final Wars, but then they just brought out Gigan, so the two never even really share the screen. Like, that's the weird thing, that Mothra shows up to help, and they give Mothra this side quest with Gigan, and I don't think she's ever even in the scene with Godzilla, to the point where it's like, that could have been something they just added in post, because it's so completely superfluous to the plot line. But here, finally just having that idea of Mothra coming in to rescue Godzilla is just such a wonderful concept that we never really got before.
Yeah, it's really great. And like Brendan was saying, Mothra looks fantastic. I think Matt Frank is absolutely incredible at drawing Heisei Mothra. And after the little moment between Godzilla and the larva, there's this moment where, you know, the two larvae help the injured Mothra. And like Godzilla kind of looks back at them. And he's drawn with this sort of expression, like he's relieved that the injured Mothra had help. And I just think that was like a nice little detail. I like when Godzilla has little nuances like that, like in, you know, Ghidorah, the three-headed monster, where the thing that seems to convince him to fight against Ghidorah is Mothra getting blasted by Ghidorah. And that seems to piss him off. So he goes in to help. I don't know. I just like when Godzilla gets these moments of caring about something.
I don't remember the Mothra bits of the ongoing series, sadly, but I love that aside from that little glare at the headbutt out of the way, there's never like a single moment during this fight Godzilla, who has just been hyper aggressive the entire comic, even thinks about attacking Mothra. I really love that little bit of like you said, this little bit of nuance and like sort of respect between the two of them. It's really good.
The other two moments during that fight that just, you know, stood out to me. I love Godzilla. They're holding the reactor, which he got. He planned this all as an ambush in advance, but holding that reactor right out of Godzilla 1985. And honestly, my wife has always hated Destroyer so much. Well, her first Godzilla fan art was just Heisei Godzilla holding Destroyer's decapitated head. And it is in the movie, he's such a monster. He puts Godzilla through so much. He drags him around the ground and he's beating him. He kills his son, seemingly. I mean, Godzilla dies believing that, at least. Like, he makes him suffer so much. And honestly, Godzilla doesn't even get to give him his comeuppance. You know, he is just this horrible bullying tormentor when Godzilla is already most at his suffering. So after everything that Destoroyah puts Godzilla through in Godzilla vs. Destoroyah, having Godzilla just rip the sword horn off of his forehead to me is so very satisfying. It's just such a cathartic moment, not only for this fight, but really for just their history in the movies in general. Like, this whole fight is gorgeous and so well choreographed, so masterfully done, but that to me was just a highlight, is finally Destoroyah getting his.
Yeah, I think that's such a hype moment. It's really like when you can feel the tide turn. Like, it's not like, oh man, Godzilla and Mothra are on the beatdown. It's like, oh no, Destoroyah screwed.
Yeah, that was really cool. And I also love Godzilla frying, like, well, whenever Destoroyah like flees and he changes into the like the little aggregate Destoroyahs running around and they try to escape and Godzilla just fries them is really great. And the panel of him roaring behind all those flames is really cool as well.
And, you know, last note, it's barely even worth calling out because it's so obvious. But, you know, I just get a smile out of the, you know, Varan shows up and Lucy's like, it's unbelievable. Like, yeah, low hanging fruit, very obvious reference, but it's still a fun one. So I think that covers our discussion of the first four episodes of Rulers of Earth. And I am not shocked, though I am quite pleased that, yeah, it is mostly a gush fest because this is one of the good ones. And it is nice just calling out so many of the little touches that make it so great. So along that line, what are your final thoughts on Godzilla Rulers of Earth, the first four issues?
I think these are really solid. Issue three was good, but it didn't really stick with me. But the other three issues were so good. Again, the art's amazing. The writing is solid. Again, very action-packed, but it doesn't feel like needless action. It all feels like it's there for a reason, and it's all really well done. I think this is a nice little, it feels like a mini arc in a way. Like, these first four issues all lead into each other really well. I don't remember where things go from here, but I feel like picking the first four issues, because me and Andrew were talking about, should we do the first five or the first four? And we settled on the first four for this first episode. And I think that was a good move because I feel like these four are really good sort of introductory arc for this series. And yeah, I thought it was really good. I just enjoyed reading these and I'm very excited to read the rest of the series and talk about it with you guys.
I was really worried this was going to have a GTS moment where, oh, this is good, but this isn't as strong as I remembered. Nah, this is still as much of a banger as I remember it being. I love this book so much. This is just a great introduction. Again, like you were saying, like just a solid mini arc of its own before the main story even gets started. Can't wait to get to issue five. Varan, baby!
For me, like I said, the back half of this series, the grand finale of Rulers of Earth, which we'll get to in a while, kind of ran out of steam from what I remember. And it disillusioned me a bit on the whole run. So because of that, I think I'd forgotten just how absolutely amazing the early part of this comic is. And hey, hopefully by the time we get to the end, it'll change my mind on that too. But this is just completely phenomenal. I cannot say enough good things about it. Aside from the character model for Lucy, which just sticks out to me as weird, the rest of the art is absolutely wonderful. So colorful, so dynamic and full of energy. It mixes and matches kaiju from different eras in a majorly fun way. Just to repeat myself from earlier, you know, I just think this benefits so much from Rodan and Anguirus and King Ghidorah and Mechagodzilla and the like having already had their moment in the sun in previous series. It forces them to dig for kaiju like Manda, Ghizorah, Varan, Destoroyah, Zilla, Orga, and we won't spoil the rest, but that's what makes it so fun and creative. It's showcasing the ones that don't usually get the spotlight because, let's face it, if you're going to do a comic, it's usually going to have King Ghidorah or Space Godzilla or Anguirus. It's usually going to be one of a select set of five or six kaiju that typically get the main screen time. And the fact that this one is giving moments and spotlights to the ones that don't usually get that, it works so well. And they're mixed and matched in this lighthearted, relatively, barring some of the implications of issue three and Eaten Sailors and Dead Luchadors, you know, Choa style alien invasion story. It's just such a wonderfully different tone from not only its precursors, but from most comics out there. I'm so glad that the previous two series exist because of the way that that forces this series to go in a different direction and just not retread the same ground that most Godzilla comics cover. I think for me, these first four issues, probably the first 10 or 12, is probably the best material of the series. I love them so much. This is top tier for me. It's fun, it's bouncy, it's full of references and jokes. And yet, when it's doing creative mashups, it's not just doing them like fan fiction-y, you know, let's see what would happen, kind of. Let's just roll some dice and throw some random kaiju together. It's legitimately going, hey, how can we use this kaiju that doesn't get the spotlight that often in an interesting way? What can we do with them that's fun, that's unique, that utilizes them in their strengths? Like you talked about with Zilla, not just as a throwaway joke. How can we play to his strengths and use him in a good way? It's the Evera-style movie to Half Century War's Hedorah or Terror of Mechagodzilla. And it's so nice to have something so colorful and joyful and just clearly celebrating the whole franchise to be included in the pantheon of Godzilla comics. So that brings us to an exciting time that we have not had for quite a while now, and that is the random number generator. It's been a few since we haven't known what our next episode was going to be. Any predictions or hopes, gentlemen?
I don't have any predictions, but even though like 90% of our episodes, I'm exaggerating, but a very high percentage of our episodes are Godzilla episodes, I'd really love a good Showa Godzilla film because we haven't talked about one since October of 2021. And I...
Wow, really?
Yeah. The last one was Godzilla vs. Hedorah for Halloween. And I've been showing a friend of mine all the Godzilla films for the first time, and we're like chest deep into the Showa era now, and I've just been really itching to talk about one of those on the show. So that's my hope. If not that, I think we're very overdue for an Ultraman episode. So one of the Ultraman films that we've got on the list would be pretty cool.
I'm just going to say, same as always, I want a standalone Kong film.
Yeah, give us the monkey RNG. Though also, I will say, been thinking about it, I'm hoping for a little bit of Gamera.
You can go for some Gamera.
Always down for Gamera on this show. Always a party.
Let's see what RNG has for us this time. That brings us to Godzilla versus Gigan.
Yes!
Ooh.
Word bubbles and all, baby.
I wouldn't say that movie specifically is my wish, but I'll accept it, I guess. Beggars can't be choosers, I guess. In the meantime, if you want to get into contact with us to send us some listener feedback to be read out on the show, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at G-Force Kaiju Pod, Facebook at facebook.com/G-Force Kaiju Pod, or just type G-Force a Kaiju Podcast into the search bar. You can email us at gforcekaijupod@gmail.com. You can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. You can rate us on Spotify, or you can leave a comment under this or any of our episodes. And as always, thank you for listening.
So, join us in a couple weeks' time for a movie that has just recently had its 50th anniversary. Going to be great to talk about, and one that I especially have a very deep connection to, which we'll get into then. But until that time, a little known fact is that actually the three of us were at Ultra Convention 7 when Destroya attacked. And so we're going to sign off by letting you know what each one of us was dressed as. So this has been Andrew, and I was, of course, dressed as the hero of the Zone Meteor comics. One of my favorites. I helped translate those comics in America, you know.
I've been Brendan, and I, of course, was dressed up as the very charismatic villain from the Alpha Corporation from everyone's favorite hit film, Gamera vs. Daimajin.
I've been Nick, and I was just dressed up as Spider-Man.